wa tsukwa nuwa radu se wa kwego. Tanya donga skigo, tanan ze wa tahun sadache, unga huwe na hadi wa nodus, nene Aboriginal Voices, oska dewa nyawa oska, ne jota FM CFRC.
And it is 6 o'clock and you are on CFRC 101.9 FM. Ani nich kimek, dukfar kwa indijnikas, minwa shan story. Ezna minwa, and ishnabi noewin. Here we go. Aboriginal Voices on this beautiful Tuesday evening in May. You know, it's interesting because there are so many people out walking around on campus or at the parks here in town in Kingston. And I'm hoping that we get a telephone call from Sean, who is on assignment right now. And he's on a trail somewhere. We'll have to find out as he goes. He's been sending me text messages, so we're at least we're in communication with him. And one of the things he did say is that he's taking a coat with him. So a weather report already from somewhere west of CFRC. That's great. Sean, take care. Enjoy all the people you're with there. That's it. People get out and hike. Spend some time walking or listening to what the sounds are in the woods or, you know, projects you do with your family or with friends, and you get out and explore various trails. And that's been part of our thrust for the past year and a half, and we'll carry on through the rest of this year. And we've also had some guests come and talk to us about activities people do outdoors. Kristen has talked about a number of trails, and two weeks ago she talked about trees and getting out and seeing the trees. She's coming up with another conversation with us here at CFRC tonight. In the second hour, she'll be talking about a challenge for families, friends, getting together. It doesn't matter what age group you go with. Could be three or four generations together going out. And it doesn't have to be a great big, long Algonquin Park-style hike. It could be, you know, just pick your favorite spot where there are a few trees and park-like gardens, that sort of thing. You could do it that way. I remember someone years ago, we did a project with the kindergarten grade 1-2 teachers, and they started with ten sort of point and shoot cameras in a classroom with the kindergarten children. And it was, you know, at first the teachers were saying, well, I'm not sure I want these children to have them, but the point and shoot cameras that we did get with the support of Camera Kingston helping us with a durable kind of camera for young children. But the kids took good care of everything, no problem. And the first assignment was to go with the camera and learn a little bit about taking pictures. And they went in teams of two, and they took their time, looked around the park that they went to. And the one kindergarten class went to a park that was probably about the size of three car parking spots. And they all explored the whole thing and then came back to the teacher, and they all had figured out where they wanted to take a picture, or two or three. And when the teacher got back to the school and sitting down in the afternoon looking at all the pictures with the children, they loved going over where those pictures were taken, since they were all in the same park. And there was all this, the teacher's words were this, it was such rich language coming from the children, because they were trying to describe what it was they had taken a picture of, where they found it, you know, a little bit about any movement that happened when they were trying to take the picture. For example, there were a couple of ants on the grass, and they were, the two girls were trying to get the picture without any being blurry, and they were so surprised when they saw their two ants standing. They look like they're standing still, but one of them said, wait, that one passed the other one, so they're moving. But no, it wasn't a motion picture. It was just a still shot. But that's what you want. You want to explore ideas. Go out and listen. Go out and look. and come back with some evidence of what you saw. If you use a camera, it's easy. You could use a film camera if you know how to use those. And problem with the film or digital film, digital images that you get when you record, it's difficult to for really young children to look at how they change things, how they cut things that they don't want in it, or parts that don't fit in with what they want to express. But a still picture is good because you can look at it. And in fact, I know another kindergarten teacher over the years who came and said, this is a really good program that she uses in a classroom with her kindergarten and pre-K and JK. JK and SK, I guess they call it. But what she did is she came up with a program on her cell phone that called Picolage. And maybe it's basically it's take your pictures and make a collage. So you can make them any size and any number. But what she was able to do is create for the children their own words. She would type them in to go with the picture they took and put them on the board, and then it would be there for the week, and they would interact with it, go and look at the pictures and tell each other stories about what's on the wall. So, you know, and plus I think a lot of them were also sent to parents. So parents would just see a sampling of what their children were doing. It's a great idea. And you can go outside with a theme, like big or small, or rocks and no rocks, or trees, or plants, insects if you want, any other kind of wildlife out there. So, you know, it's creativity is one of the things you want to foster activity related to creative ideas. So there's a couple of ideas. So we're going to hear from Kristen after, I guess about 20 after 7 tonight. We'll be able to hear that. And she'll give you the challenge. And we had fun chatting, but we were also using a remote interviewing equipment here at CFRC. So a new challenge for me. And it was a lot of fun, and it turned out to be probably one of the most fun activities that I've been involved in the last year or two. So that's great. Also coming up tonight, we're going to let Denise know that somewhere between now and 6:35, we're going to be able to get Joseph back on, and he's going to talk about birds and the idea of owls, because she missed part of it and wanted to know how she could hear it. So I said, well, we'll do that tonight. So we're going to have Joe come in, and he's going to do some work. Joe's from Wequamacong area, and he speaks Ojibwe, but he's going to teach us a few Ojibwe words for the different birds and try to explain what the birds are all about, how you can tell from just the word itself what bird it is. So then we're going to have that a little while later too. So I'm having fun here tonight getting organized. One quick message that came to me yesterday for tonight's show. I've got a note here that says, don't forget to let everybody, especially Indigenous students here at Queen's University who are finished their degrees and they're leaving or have left. I don't know. Some have. That the Four Directions Center would like to hear from you if you haven't already told them that you're finished your program here, because they do have a special message for each person. So that's anyone who's graduated this year from Queen's University and you're Indigenous, please let Four Directions Center know that you're leaving and you're done. You've made it through. All right. So we're going to, I got a song coming up, and actually I thought I had it ready for you, but Kelly Cardinal. She's from Western Canada, and the song is Over and Over.
the ground beneath me shake. Then you held me through the night. Something just how right. It's got me wide awake. It's the things you never said running in my head. Over and over and over and over and over again. Over and over and over and over and over again. When you tell me that you love me, almost make a believer of me. 'Cause I lose myself in your eyes. And like a hammer to my heart, I am blown apart. When you reveal your pretty lies, then you pick up the pieces and I'm back in your.
My name is Genevieve, and I'll be hosting Peace, Love, and Jenny on CFRC 101.9 FM on Saturday evenings at 8 p.m. We'll be exploring everything from pop and soul to funk, jazz, and even a touch of hip-hop. Music that spans decades but all connects through good vibes, peace and love, and of course, a little bit of me, Jenny. See you there!
I'm here to tell you to come to our Sistema Kingston year-end concert.
It's on May 14th at 4:30 p.m. It's admission with donation.
We will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center.
You'll hear strings, orff instruments, and lots of singing.
Hope to see you all there.
Roll the dice on Saturday nights at 11 p.m. with CFRC's Radio Roulette. Every week we get a new randomly generated playlist courtesy of the online digital media library. We let fate decide, and the host must abide. So I hope you'll join me on this journey through genres, time, and taste each and every single Saturday at 11 p.m.
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
Well, there you go. Lots of things happening. And, you know, it's interesting here at CFRC because, you know, it's summertime and you expect to have a quiet on campus. But today, for some reason, there were quite a few people traveling around looking at buildings and looking at different places on campus. I'm not sure if there is somebody who knows what's happening on campus, something special today or through this week. Let me know, because there could be people visiting and we could open up CFRC for a visit during the daytime if they would like to see how radio is put together or podcasting or where the bands go to into our studio to share their new music and their stories. And so, you know, just give us a shout that or drop by the station during the day when all the managers are around. Fair bit of activity out there. I'm not quite sure what's happening. I know our broadcast speaker is still going outdoors, so we'll give you time to see what's happening. You know, I was looking at CBC News, Indigenous News, and see what they have available for us. But as I got going, I thought, oh, wait a sec. I heard about the First Nations communities in the far northern part of Ontario have made an agreement with the federal government to begin to take control of child welfare in their communities. And so that whole thing has been in the works for about 4 or 5 years now. And I know Cindy Blackstock has been working for many more years than that to be able to get First Nations communities to have control over child welfare. And so we'll see what happens. I know the federal government put some money in last week and said, here's how much money there is, and the community the whole province will have to get going at setting up who's going to be working and what kind of programs are needed. And so we'll see how it turns out. It's going to be quite interesting to see, because I know a few people who have been working with child welfare over the last 6 or 7 years, the graduates from Queen's University. And so they have been working in their communities. And so now we're going to look and see just how the programs will be set up. That's what I'm wondering. You know, are there going to be lots of jobs for the people from those communities to help support young people in a difficult time. I'm looking too to see if this summer we've invited some people from Northern Ontario to get involved in our show through the month of July. So we'll maybe see if that's one of those items that they want to talk about. May not be, but we'll see what happens. The other area of interest, I think, has been what has been happening in healthcare, and I don't see it on the main news channel about elders care or long-term care for elders in the community. But now, you know, with the number of events that have happened over the past 3 years, partly for me, because I'm getting closer, not ready for long-term care, but, you know, there are you kind of start to wonder what is available to the people who don't have access to support teams. You know, I was just talking with a listener here for CFRC who fell a week ago Sunday and broke the thigh bone, which is, you know, the big one just below your hip. And the operation went really well. The surgeon was really pleased with that. And the whole program that kicked in, and they're in the hospital. They were working at getting this person to walk a little bit and become self-sufficient. And I jokingly, when I was talking, I said, oh, well, you know, they won't let you out until you can do stairs. And the next thing today I heard him that it was a success going up and down the stairs, but very slow. I thought, okay, yeah, but what's going to happen? And then the next thing was that they're going home tomorrow from the hospital to home. And is home ready was the question. But this is the part that I wondered, how well is this for remote communities or, in fact, rural communities? Because the person I was talking with lives in a city. So the program, the doctor and the team at the hospital have put together occupational therapists and physiotherapists and nursing team and the PSWs, the personal support workers. So they've set up a schedule, and for the first 2 weeks, 3 days a week for physiotherapy, 2 days a week for the occupational therapist to come around and check and make sure they're, you know, if you have questions about how to use the different pieces of equipment that they have for you to keep you mobile, because the idea is get up and move, and, you know, not fast, but certainly keep movement so that, you know, that your oxygen, it goes in and supplies your blood system so that your whole body gets oxygen where it needs it, but also your heart and circulatory system work well. So all these things, you stop to think, okay, what about the elder care homes and what's available? So I'm going to talk to a couple of doctors later this week and next week, and we have a plan put together now that there's a long-term care center close to Sudbury, and we're going to talk to the director. We're going to talk to one of the nurses who's volunteered to chat with us about day-to-day life as a nurse in those settings. And these are settings for people who are unable to live at home, but have some mobility. But also, they want to do it in a way. The people in the building want to set it up so that the older people who are staying long-term actually feel comfortable and have a social time with others, and also can, you know, stay active in some way at whatever level they can do. So we're gonna do that. And we do have someone in one of the long-term care centers who's going to talk to us. What's it like to be the person who is in long-term care? And I was in prepping for it. We were chatting just briefly on telephone, and the comment came first. I've written it out. I've got entry. So what was it like? What did he go through getting ready to go into long-term care? What his concerns were and how they were met by the people where he went. And the second one, after being there for the first few weeks, how am I going to enjoy the food? Because he was used to going and making his own meals and his own schedule, and now he's going into a place where the meals are basically at a specific time. And so he's going to tell us all about that and how they got around it a bit. And then the other one he wanted to know was, can I get outside to go and actually hear the birds, see the birds, listen to the wind go through the trees? Those were the big things that he wanted. So He's going to tell us a lot more, but I think he's going to be animated when he does it. He's really excited about being on our show. So that's what we'll do. All right, I have a Derek Miller song set up, ready to go. And right after that, we'll get Joseph and see if he's ready to go with his conversation about birds.
Like a star, I was hopeful for a while, but they're just a little too far. Round and round I go. Where I stop? Well, I don't know. Should fly, gently say goodbye. Someone call an angel down. It's getting too dark here on the ground. Someone call an angel down. Well, I was breathing in my life so deeply, and all the air was stale. Round and round we go. Where we stop? Well, I don't know. Someone
sense. Myron McCookery.
Mir Mickery, yeah.
Mir Mickery. See, it sounds way cooler when this guy says it. So Mir Mickery. So basically what this means is that birds do not grab seeds from medicinal plants and then poop them out somewhere, and that's where it grows. This phenomenon only occurs in other parts of the world, throughout Europe and throughout parts of Asia. The reality is in the north, like in the Great Lakes region, birds are one of the biggest enemies of plants, of seeds. They digest them and they destroy them. So what happens is, our distributor of plant medicines are ants. Ants will collect the seed because the seeds have a food called an elaiosome, a casing around that seed. And the ants will eat that casing that is nutritionally complete for them, and essentially prepare the seed for germination. And from there, bears, black bears, will grab and eat larvae from anthills, but they end up eating all of those seeds from the medicinal plants as well. And so all of the seeds that ants are collecting, they store them in their home, and bears bring those out and eat them all with the larvae, the nutritionally and calorically dense larvae. And so the bear's digestive system is like this big. And so the seeds go through the bear unharmed, and wherever the bear poops, it's just a giant buffet table for mainly deer mice. Deer mice. Will see all of these seeds, all of this food, and the mouse will collect all of these, and they will create a network of trails underneath the leaf litter where they bury those seeds a centimeter to a centimeter and a half deep throughout the entire forest floor. And so they bury all of those medicinal plant seeds, and all throughout the winter, they grab those seeds and they digest them and they destroy them. And so the reason why we're not allowed to bother owls, the reason why we're not able to look at owls, the reason why if you impede on an owl's responsibility in an ecosystem, everyone is going to die, is because the owl is responsible for removing the mouse. When they remove the mouse, all of those seeds will germinate. They will not be mouse food. They will become our medicine. And so it's very important for diversity that we rely on for sickness and injury. And so when Andres was the one years ago who told me in Yorkdale Mall, when I met him for the first time after Costa Rica, who said that one family of barred owls can eat 30,000 mice in 1 year. And you compound that with the other species of owls. You compound that with the other protector of medicine, who is snakes, who also remove the mouse. This is a very important system that human beings are supposed to be helping. And so if we are harassing owls, we're impeding on the natural plant diversity of this area that affects our ability to access medicine. It affects pollinators, food sources. It affects so many different things. And so this is why we have such an stringent rule. You cannot bother owls. You know, now we have the system that we can rely on for to a certain degree, right? And so we're a little bit insulated from this tradition and the importance of it. But this is why in the series, this is why owls carry such an intense responsibility to an ecosystem and our opportunity to live a good life here. And this is why, you know, and this is a sincere gesture of respect to some of the traditional knowledge holders and practitioners who are in the audience here, is that, you know, and we love seeing owls, but to be respectful in this very important responsibility portion to allow them to do what they're supposed to do, and to not impede on their responsibility in all of these different relationships. And then just a small gesture to all of the participants here to look at each of those influencers in the cycle: ants, bears, mice, owls, and snakes, and our responsibility to help with each of those processes. For our sake, but for the sake of our environment and as well. So all of our first species to talk about owls.
So one of my main roles besides being a biologist is to try to keep these guys focused. This is what I normally do in our conversations. And so after listening to this amazing connection between bears, ants, medicine, and owls, I want to go back to the name. But before I go back to the name, I want to say how responsible this little guy here is, because it is cannibalistic, meaning it eats other owls from the same species. It eats bats, shorebirds, jays, woodpeckers, grouse, swallows, flycatcher, waxwings, crayfish, earthworms, tadpoles, frogs, rats, squirrels, and rabbits. And so you're seeing one of the most vicious. After researching the diet of an eastern screech owl, I was shocked. It eats tadpoles. Do you know how hard it is to catch a tadpole? It's incredible. And so it's very important to understand that owls have this critical role, particularly because they're very attractive. We're not very responsible with owls. We really want to see them, and we don't let them sleep. We constantly harass them. We're not ethical when we find them. But having said that, having said how responsible this dude is,
So moe is to cry. This describing somebody who is crying. Moe, and moe nas is I guess like the little crier. That's how we describe this bird.
Okay, this is the first bird, and I promise everybody, we had a meeting about this. We talked about sticking to just a few minutes a bird. But this has just been the Eastern Screech Owl. And yes, if you listen to the calls of the Eastern Screech Owl, the name should make sense to you. However, see, Joe's got more caveats.
So you see the tremolos at first, and then at the end, there's the whining, a bit like a horse. And so they usually do it in like all together. And that's what gives his name. And looking at the time, we need to start picking it up. So should we go to our next bird?
Going to the next owl, but we are now looking at the barred owl, Strix varia.
I think I can pronounce this one.
Go on.
So everyone, I've been trying to learn how to pronounce the names of birds. Let it be said, I am not Anishinaabe. I'm Costa Rican. I'm not indigenous, even though in Latin America, we tend to understand as all of us being Métis, all of us being mestizos. But I'm not indigenous. And my role, as Junaid said in this, is to help with the 2-eye seeing. I try to be one of the eyes, and we try to be Joe's supporters and help him reach this goal. This is what we do. We try to support Joe in the work he's doing. And so in that process, I'm learning how to pronounce in Anishinaabe. And so please, Ninate, don't judge me.
judge him.
Go, go, go.
Perfect.
You might have noted, what is the first thing that you might have noticed is that there is a very onomatopoeic nature of that sound. Go, go, go. There's a repeat. And when sounds are, or segments of terms are repeated in Anishinaabe Mo'en, it's often emphasizing a behavior. It's often emphasizing that, you know, this creature is repeatedly doing an action. And this will come back around, in other names as well. But Joe, can you tell us about the barred owl and this name in particular? Well, you can just play the sound again, I guess.
It's my favorite owl sound. My favorite owl sound. I don't think I know exactly who my favorite owl is yet, but yeah, there is that onomatopoeia. So we kind of have Yeah, kind of like a little methodology that we try to figure out with each bird for all of the different sounds of all of the different names to try to find out exactly which species we are talking about. And this is something that I've suspected for a very long time, is that a kokoko is how we can describe so many different owls. But each owl has its own specific name that is describing a very unique behavior, physical characteristic, pattern that it accomplishes. And that is what we choose to emulate that species, just like the singing, the crying song of the Eastern screech owl. That's how we describe this one. But I think a kokoko, if it's not describing the whole family of owls, it's describing this one specifically, because you could just kind of hear just the way that it sounds. Go, 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 go. My grandma does it real good. Like, exactly. Yeah, so you could just kind of hear it right in the name. But yeah, I really like this one.
And I learned from you, Andres, that barred owls have a very unique behavior of, like, hunting very actively on the ground. Can you talk a little bit about the habitat that they prefer?
They really like woody areas close to water, and in many cases barred owls have been seen wading. Can you imagine an owl just walking in the water to catch some fish? And barred owls are less vicious than some of their close relatives. Less vicious than the great horned owls and the eastern screech owl. It has smaller talons than the great horn, and so it has a more limited type of prey that it goes to, but it can be very active on the ground. But I want to circle back to the process that Joe was talking about. One of the challenging things of what we've been doing is that in many cases, Joe goes into a community and he finds a name, but that name might have been disconnected from a bird. And in some cases, people know a bird and they don't know their name. And so what we've been trying to do is working back on the names and on the bird knowledge to understand who does the name belong to. You might remember that Joe said this name, Go-Go-Go, could be the name of the family, the name of the group of owls, or very specifically, the name for this owl. And it's because in that process, we need to try to dissect the name so we find who it belongs to. Right, Joe?
Yeah, what each of those sounds are describing is specific to each species. Yeah.
And so, you know, on that note of trying to find those accurate names, we come to what would seem very reasonable, but really in practice doesn't quite pan out. So this is the name Wabgokokok. And so the wab part is part of the word wabshkike, which is white, to be white. And the gokokok you've already been familiarized with. So this is kind of saying, like, this is a white barred owl. And when I said this name to Joe, because so much of my understanding of Anishinaabe Moin is from dictionaries and trying to find resources online, he immediately went, yeah, but I never hear that in community. And so, Joe, tell me the struggle you have with this name.
So this is really fun for, you know, like, especially for the indigenous people in this audience, or people who are really wanting to learn the language. You run into this a lot. And I have so much experience with this, with plants, kind of transliterations, or the way that some research was done, because what happens in research in indigenous communities for so long has been so extractive, is that you find lots of error. You find lots of research that is done, just maybe not in the best practice. So with this one, I've never heard anybody in any community. I go and I teach about medicine in hundreds of communities and hundreds of institutions all over Ontario, all over the Great Lakes region. And as payment to me, I ask the community to find people who have bird knowledge, because this is honestly what I've been obsessed with for a very long time. I like telling everybody, I never really liked plants. This was kind of just given to me, and I am responsible for this, and I've been doing the best I could with what I was given for plant medicine knowledge. And so when I go and teach, I want to learn about birds because this is what I really am obsessed with. And so when I go to work in a community to teach about plants, find your bird knowledge holders and try to bring them out to the event, so that during lunchtime and breaks, I could pick their brain and try to find any kind of knowledge that I can about bird names. And I've yet a community to go to where there has been a bird knowledge holder who confidently said, "Wapkokokok, that's a snowy owl." Most of them honestly say, "I do not know." And most of them gestured to Kokoko being the name of the family of owls. That's all of our owls are Kokoko. You know, they all embody all of the sounds that name is responsible for. And just to say Wap Kokoko is a little bit of an easy out. And it's our job to do the research required to be able to find what probably the snowy owl's real name is. Yeah, so we have our work cut out for us. That was a really good point. I really wanted to make sure that we cover tonight.
Okay, moving on to our next owl. And this is the first example of the name including body parts. So Andres, you want to try this one again?
No.
Yo hi yo ho way, yo hi yo ho way, hana 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 yo ho way. Hana yo we, ungwe home,
ungwe home,
skana aga hage,
skana aga hage,
owen jage,
owen jage,
deon quatuan ye,
deon quatuan ye,
owen jage,
owen jage.
Deon quatuan ye,
deon quatuan ye.
Yo ha yo ho we,
yo ha yo ho we, hana 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 yo ho we. Hana yo we,
ungwe howe,
ungwe howe,
skana aga hage,
skana aga hage,
owen jage,
owen jage,
deon quatuane,
deon quatuane,
owen jage,
owen jage,
deon quatuane,
deon quatuane.
Yo ha yo ho we,
yo ha yo ho we, hana 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 yo ho we.
Ungwe howe,
ungwe howe,
skana aga hage,
skana aga hage,
owen jage,
owen jage,
deon quatuane,
deon quatuane,
owen jage,
owen jage,
deon quatuane,
deon quatuane.
Yo ha yo ho we,
yo ha yo ho we,
hana yo ho we, hana yo ho we, hana yo ho we.
Yahweh, Hana Yahweh, Hana Yahweh, Hana Yahweh, Hana Yahweh, Hana Yahweh, Hana Yahweh.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Vicki Cummings. My grandson is Harley Kohler. Hi, Harley. Surprise, surprise. Today I'm going to read you a legend. I don't have a book to read it from, but it is a Native American legend. It's called The Legend of How the Bear Lost His Tail. Do you know why a bear has a short tail and why sometimes he can be heard growling in the woods for what seems like no particular reason at all? In the beginning, Bear had a long, bushy tail, which he was quite proud of. Bear loved to show off his tail to all the other animals, including Fox. Well, now Fox loved to play tricks, because that's how foxes are. They're pretty sly and tricky. And one day he decided to have some fun with Bear. In the winter, the lake had frozen over like it is now, and Fox knew the path that Bear took down by the lake and decided to lure Bear in with some fish. Fox cut a hole in the ice like you would do for ice fishing, and he stacked as many fish as he could next to it. Fox knew Bear loved to eat fish, but so did Fox. Fox didn't want Bear to fish in his spot, so fearing that Bear would eat all the fish up, he decided to play this trick. So when Bear saw that all that fish stacked into a pile next to the hole, he got all excited. He asked Fox to teach him how to catch that many fish. Bear swore he would do everything that the fox had told him because he wanted just as much fish as Fox had. So Fox took the bear to another spot on the lake and cut a hole in the ice. Fox turned to the bear and said to him, "You must put your beautiful bushy tail down into that water to enable to catch the fish." So Fox told Bear he must sit very, very still and very, very quiet, and he shouldn't think of anything at all, just peace and quiet, because the fish could read your thoughts. And then Fox trotted off into the woods and the bushes, and he told Bear, "Now don't you move till I tell you to." And so Fox, being the trickster that he was, started laughing at the bear because he thought the bear was just foolish to sit with this beautiful tail in this fishing hole. Bear did what he was told, and he did not move, and he did not think any thoughts. Fox watched the bear sitting so still. He was laughing and laughing and rolling around on the ground, and soon Fox grew tired of watching the bear, so he went home. The next morning, Fox went back to the lake wondering if Bear had gone home. And it snowed during the night, so when he got out on the lake, he saw this big mound and there was snow covered over it next to the hole, and he realized the bear was still there and he still had his tail in the hole. Fox looked at him and he goes, "Now, Bear, now." So the bear jumps up and, oh, he heard this crack and, oh, that really hurt. And his tail was frozen in the hole, and it ripped off. And he lost this big, beautiful tail. His beautiful tail was still stuck in this hole. Oh, the bear moaned, and he groaned, and he was in a lot of pain. And Fox thought it was just hilarious. Well, Bear was not happy, and Bear gave out a big growl. And now, when you hear bears growling in the woods, you know why. Because the bear is mad because he still has that short tail. He doesn't have that big, beautiful, bushy tail anymore. That darn fox, he played an awful trick on Bear, didn't he? Yeah, that was kind of mean. Well, I hope you enjoyed the story. Talk to you later. Bye, Harley.
Try to call her, will she be around? Sessions.
Oh yeah, CFRC Live Sessions, Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay. Peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Live music fans, get ready. Spring Reverb returns for its fifth edition May 28th through the 31st in downtown Kingston, Ontario, and CFRC is thrilled to be part of the action. Over 4 days, you can catch live music panels, workshops, and see what makes the Kingston music scene tick. Get ready for acts like Bedouin Soundclash, The Dirty Nil, Hot Garbage, By Divine Rights, Slaves of Spanky, Pony Girl, Tanya Iyer, Golden Feather, and so much more. Also make sure to check out all the free panels, workshops, a merch market, and the first ever Catarocway Punk Rock Flea Market. For more information on the lineup and tickets, visit kppconcerts.com or Spring Reverb YGK on socials. See you there.
Well, you're back with Aboriginal Voices, and yes, you know, it's interesting because that the song that we heard was Isque's song called Soldier, and it's a really strong song.